are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
For the gift of this day and for our community of spiritual nurture and compassion, we give thanks. We light this chalice as a symbol of our faith. May our many sparks meet and merge in communion of heart and soul. Those were the words of Bruce Southworth, who's a Unitarian in America. In our church, we do candles and today of reflection, in tune with the theme, which is searching for soul. I could have actually given Marcus the microphone, couldn't I? Because it's been wiped down, ready for his use anyway. But I'm going to invite Marcus now to come forward to read the reading, which is from The Soul's Religion, a book by Thomas More, who was a Catholic priest who saw the light, got out of the priesthood, became a psychotherapist and married and wrote lots of books about the care of the soul.
Every human life is a profound mystery. Deep and indivisible currents make us who we are, and the world around us is full of secret intentions and laws. Our response to all this mystery is to treat it as a problem to be solved and to do everything possible to be informed and in control. But another way is to bow down in ignorance and confess our limitation. Religion and spirituality, for eons intimately connected, offer creative ways to become people of depth and compassion through embracing mystery. The religions have a precious cargo, but they often fail in their job by moralizing, intellectualizing, and defending themselves to such an extent that their real purpose is obscured. Today, people all over the world are abandoning the religions in disgust and anger. Still, everyone has an instinct for transcendence. People know intuitively that some kind of spiritual life is necessary, and so many are searching on their own or joining new churches and communities. They distinguish sharply between the personal spirituality and the religious instruction they have abandoned. The point of spirituality is to find a way to break the boundaries of reason and ego. What we find on the other side is not wisdom, but emptiness. The word fool originally meant an inflated ball or bellows. The American Heritage Dictionary uses the telling word airhead. On the other side of ego is air, the possibility of breathing again instead of trying to outsmart existence. Similarly, Hildegard of Bingen speaks of being a feather on the breath of God. It has taken me a lifetime to reach this beginner's appreciation of air and emptiness. All the arguments and examples in this book point to the last page, the empty one. Intelligence happens when we stop trying to be smart. A sense of self appears when you no longer have a need to be somebody. Transcendence arrives when you embrace the life that is given.
Thank you.
Soul searching is an honest evaluation of your feelings and motives. An example of soul searching is when you take time to meditate and think about your purpose in life, what's important to you, and whether what you're doing computes. I was going to address that theme, but really, Chris Hanna's talk last week on the ego and the soul really covered most of what I was going to say. So I've switched the words around to searching for the soul. Soul in religion and philosophy refers to the immaterial essence of a human being that confers our individuality and humanity. The mind or the self, perhaps. In theology, the soul is further defined as that part of a person connecting with the divine. It survives the death of the body. The skeptical amongst us are not favorably disposed to ethereal substances and non-material spirits ascending to heaven after death. In Judaism, nefesh means a living being rather than an immortal entity, but it was translated as soul in English Bibles, and only in more recent editions as psyche. Anyone who's had the experience of visiting a person near death and feels that the lights have gone out, that the person is no longer present, even though they're still breathing and going through a lot of the motions of living, can get a handle on what we mean by soul as the driver of the body and spirit, that presence which makes a physical body alive and unique in identity. Recently, I was asked what I thought the difference was between soul and spirit. Well, I didn't think there was any difference, but being famous for being confidently wrong, I decided to go the old Wikipedia and Google. And the first Christian site I checked informed me that the soul is our humanity that makes us feel our emotions. Fair enough. Plus, it is our way to magnify God through our human limitations. Didn't get that bit. Moving on. The spirit is our deeper connection with the Lord when we believe in God and receive Jesus Christ as our Lord and Saviour. Oh dear. I'm in the evangelist's tent and I'm looking for the exit. I skimmed the commentary and read a lot of texts from the Bible, and at some point I got a bit of a handle on the structure and actually found a diagram, so there we go. The soul in this diagram from an unknown author, which it often is on the internet, appears to be the most complex and interesting of these components. You see, the body's only got the five senses hanging on it, really, hasn't it? But the soul has got almost everything that I've already mentioned on it. It's the part of us that's threatened by the Dementors in Harry Potter. The Dementors aren't just like the wolf. They don't just eat you all up. They're soul destroyers. There's a text in Matthew, "Do not fear those who kill the body." Think about Faust or even Paganini, who are reputed to have sold their souls to the devil in exchange for power and talent. That begs the question in Mark's gospel, "For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul?" So soul equates to mind, emotion, and will. That covers a lot of territory, and it leaves us with the question of spirit, connection with the divine. The early Christians were exhorted to live according to the spirit and not the flesh. When I read Thomas More's book, The Soul's Religion, I discovered that his lifelong quest was to look for the connection between soul and spirit. He thinks when the situation is ideal, it's impossible to tell the difference between soul and spirit. But circumstances are rarely ideal, he says, and then only for a passing, revealing moment. Usually we spend half our time enmeshed in the tangles of the soul, at work, home, dealing with our desires and fears. We devote the other half to cultivating a spiritual life that has meaning and is honest and well-founded. These two dimensions feed each other, and one without the other produces neuroticism. Well, if that distinction between body, soul, and spirit does not sit with you, you're not alone. There are plenty of theologians who refer only to body and spirit, or body and soul. That's the dichotomy, not the trichotomy. Modern theologians increasingly hold to the viewpoint that the human being is an indissoluble entity, unity, an entity. Body and soul are not separate components, but just two facets of a united whole. Now, this more accurately reflects the pre-Christian Hebrew thought, as well as neuroscience. I mentioned earlier the phenomenon of the soul or essence of a person appearing to depart from some people before they actually die. I'm probably not alone in thinking that shutting down parts of the brain would do this. So we're basically back into Unitarian-friendly territory. We don't need a trinity of self, just a recognition that our self has depths, often hidden, but depths that we can access and may need to access when we find ourselves being drawn in two different directions. We might be self-sabotaging, we might be pursuing goals that are no longer meaningful to us. The soul is an aspect of ourselves that we're oblivious of when we're busy. We become aware of it when we're quiet and reflective, and we become uncomfortably aware of it when we feel driven in a direction we do not consciously or rationally really want to go in. The soul is a messy thing for Unitarian Universalists. The word itself carries so much baggage. I won't go back there. But a good entry point to thinking about the soul is poetry. And by the way, today is International Poetry Day. So it's quite timely for me to read a poem by Mary Oliver. Is the soul solid like iron? Or is it tender and breakable, like the wings of a moth and the beak of a bird? Who has it, and who doesn't? I keep looking around me. The face of the moose is as sad as the face of Jesus. In the fall, the black bear carries leaves into the darkness. One question leads to another. Does it have a shape, like an iceberg? Does it have one lung, like the snake or the scallop? Why should I have it and not the ant eater who loves her children? Why should I have it and not the camel? Come to think about it, what about the maple leaves? What about the blue iris? What about all the little stones sitting alone in the moonlight? What about roses and lemons with their shining leaves? What about the grass? I'm sure nature inspires many of us to think along similar lines. These images of the poet touch us and stir our sense of mystery. They remind us how little we know of the world around us. Perhaps it's right that there are some things about which we know little but a name. The Sufis tell a story about a man who married a wife much younger than him. One day, his faithful servant approached him and said, "Your new wife is acting suspiciously. She's brought this huge chest. It belonged to your grandmother. It used to have a few embroideries in it. Anyway, I believe there's a lot more in it now, and she's sent me away and forbidden me to look inside it." The man went to his wife's room and found her sitting beside the chest. "Will you show me what's in that?" he asked. "Because of your servant's suspicions," she said, "or because you don't trust me?" "Wouldn't it be easier to just open it without thinking about all these undertones?" her husband asked. "Don't think that's possible," she said. "Give me the key," he said. She held it up. "Dismiss your servant and I will give it to you." Well, the servant was dismissed. The woman handed the key over to her husband. Then she too left the room, troubled. The old man thought about the chest for a long time. Then he called four gardeners from the estate. They carried the chest out into a distant part of the grounds and buried it. And the matter was never referred to again. Why speculate about what can't be proved? That was my attitude to the soul until I read Thomas More's Care of the Soul. Soul, he says, is not a thing. It's a quality or dimension of experiencing life and ourselves. It has to do with depth, value, relatedness, heart, and personal substance. I do not use the word here as an object of religious belief or as something to do with immortality. Now, this view is more akin to the thinking of Carl Jung, whom Chris Hannah quoted last week. Care of the soul begins with the observance of how the soul manifests itself and how it operates. We can't care for the soul unless we are familiar with its ways. Observance is a word from ritual and religion. It means to watch out for, but also to honour and keep, as in the observance of a holiday. The zerv in observance originally referred to tending sheep. Observing the soul, we keep an eye on its sheep. Where are they wandering? What are they eating? The latest addiction. A striking dream. A troubling mood. Thomas More relates a powerful dream image from a client whose symptom was an eating disorder. She dreamt her esophagus was made of plastic and it wasn't long enough to reach the stomach. Interesting image for the modern world. Our means of connecting to our inner work do not reach deep enough. The esophagus is an excellent image of one of the soul's chief functions, and that is to transfer material from the outside world into the interior. But in this dream, it's made of an unnatural substance that stands for the superficiality of our age, plastic. And if this soul function is plastic, then we will not be well fed. So, care of the soul is observance and honouring the signposts, the scenery, the obstacles, the companions of your inner journey. Sounds simple enough. Why use that troubling word soul instead of psychoanalysis? Time for another story. This one's about a sheep farmer who's learnt something about his soul from years of watching both the sheep and the changing weather outside himself and inside himself. But he has one more powerful lesson to learn about the soul. It came when his wife was about to deliver the last baby. It was hay baling time and the shepherd had been betrayed by the weather. He was feverishly baling hay, trying to outrace a coming storm, and his wife went into early labour. He asked, should they start now? Because the hospital was 30 miles away. Finish baling, she'd urged him. Otherwise the hay crop will be lost. Well, he didn't need much convincing. He knew what hay was, and he knew how much purchased hay could cost. So he baled. The storm came and made further baling useless. He didn't have time to load the bales on the wagon even. He went home and found his wife lying still. Her ruptured womb no longer urged an infant to be born. The shepherd had not seen the soul depart his wife. What he saw was only flesh. He could see her now weighing her pain and urging him to bail. Better to lose a hay crop than his mate, though, and a helpless infant. Then rain fell in sheets and he knew his hay would also rot. He crumpled on the bed, clutched his hands at his heart, astonished by its violent beating. He feared it might burst. Pain shot towards his shoulder. But he saw that succumbing now would be a cruel and pointless joke. He vowed, "No, I will not die today. I am still more than meat." The shepherd did not weep. His heart regained its ancient pace. Slowly he rose and sought help. How does one confront such evil? How do we bear grief? We're talking now about the soul as something that endures, something that teaches us to endure. It's part of courage and wisdom that grows from life experience, from unearned or inexplicable suffering. Something that we sense is either lost or changed when we're in the presence of death, and something that helps us live, choose to live in the face of it. Tradition teaches us that the soul lies midway between understanding and unconsciousness, and that its instrument is neither the mind nor the body, but imagination. Imagination is the key to understanding your soul. If we are truly observant, honouring the daily messages our soul sends us, and we can greet those messages with imagination rather than literalism, we will find that our soul becomes a true companion, easing our passage through this very real and difficult world. What are the daily messages of the soul? Well, ironically, many of them are symptoms, physical and emotional signals that we usually try to suppress or ignore or simply wait till they go away. One of the most puzzling ideas that Carl Jung ever put forward in his writing was this one. He said, "The soul is for the most part outside the body." This sounds so extraordinary because all of our usual thinking about the soul associates it with mind and locates it in the body. To say that the soul exists mostly outside the body is to connect the soul with our action in the world in an essential way. Jung echoes the shepherd's insight that husbandry, taking care of the things of the world, is in itself a connection into soul. Jung built himself a stone tower. Oh, I've forgotten that. That's the picture of the poet. But that's the tower I wanted to show you. It's pointed out if you go to the lake at Geneva. He lived his belief in the connection between the outward and inward dimensions of the soul. Every few years, he'd be moved to make additions to it. The daily acts associated with building, maintaining, and living within the tower became a profound part of his spiritual, personal spirituality. He chiselled the names of his ancestors in the courtyard of the tower. He directed the ceiling with motifs. He painted dream images on the wall. He worked on carvings that became part of the decor. The outward work and the inner work that was manifested by the reading and writing were all one, all in his tower. The soul feeds on the life around it. To the soul, the ordinary is sacred, and the everyday is the primary source of religion. This is how soul and church are connected. Everybody has a soul, but not everyone knows how to touch and heal and nurture soul within their lives. Care of the soul can be encouraged by the recovery or sustenance of formal religious tradition. Observance of the signals of the soul is part of what a religious tradition is all about. The opportunities that church creates for conversation and mutual support in groups, small and large, formal and informal, helping us to develop the courage and the language to talk about soul. It's a great gift and the great curse of many Unitarians that we are more comfortable with the intellectual path of religious understanding. Yet we all know our lives, our values, our sense of being at home in the world have been created not only by our intellectual connection with the world, but by our experiences at connectedness, of anger at injustices, of wonder at the overwhelming beauty, experiences that can be wordless. Soul is the place where all these experiences meet together with our ideas. Perhaps the vernacular of African American speech has best captured the correct meaning of the word soul. When you hear a black person praising music or food by saying they got soul, you know there is authenticity, depth, and an exuberance which is being pointed out. We continue to strive in this church for some of that soulfulness to permeate our theology, our community, our daily lives together. Back in 1910, writing to Freud, Carl Jung observed the churches of his day and commented, "What infinite rapture and wantonness lie dormant in our religion. we must bring to fruition its hymn of love. His observation is still true, and his challenge has yet to be taken up. May we rise to meet it. Benediction is by Heather Rion Starr. May whatever gatherings or activities we engage in Sunday afternoon help restore us, our connections to one another, our sense of hope, beauty, and fun in this world, our deep knowing that we have to take care of ourselves and each other with love and joy if we are to soulfully survive the world's mayhem.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.